Were you surprised at the reaction the first episode of this thing got?
Yeah, I was somewhat taken aback. It's pretty thrilling to have somebody wanting to hear what you have to say, for
Well,
sure.
And the other half of this, or the other third of this, is that we get good guests. Gina Miller. I worked with Gina when she was at CBS 11. She's a sports journalist, has been forever. But now she's vice president with FC Dallas. And so I thought it would be fun to have Gina on to talk about preparation. I remember reading someplace where you said you were the tallest girl in Texas at one point and the worst basketball player.
That is true. That's absolutely true. You know, at 5'11", I was a center at Lake Hill Prep, you know, and,
yeah.
And I was an awesome center because I was the tallest girl in my entire league. This was TAPS 1A at the time. Tallest girl in the state of Texas. And I led Dallas-Fort Worth in rebounding for about 2 years straight. And the funny thing is, you know, they were all offensive rebounds off my own misses, you know. So I'd be putting them back like four times. So I was the tallest girl in the state of Texas, probably one of the worst centers in the state of Texas as well. But it's that hard work and preparation and that commitment to team and that commitment to leadership and being someone who's willing to be led and that sets you up for long-term professional success.
When did you know that broadcasting was something you really wanted to do?
About the age of 14.
Really?
All I ever wanted to do was be a sportscaster. I wanted to be Bob Ortegal, true to my basketball roots. You know, I did. I wanted to do color analysis for Mavericks games. But at the time, you know, and this is where I think this diversity in broadcasting really comes into play. You know, this was the late 80s, early 90s, and there were no women calling basketball games, especially men's basketball games on broadcast television. And I didn't let that deter me. I wanted to be a sportscaster and talk sports on TV. And of course, my parents had no experience in this area. They didn't know of anyone doing this for a living, much less a woman doing this for a living. So they really didn't want me to do this at all. They discouraged me from doing it, but went to University of Houston, focused on getting a broadcast journalism major. At the time it was radio TV because they didn't even have broadcast journalism or sports broadcasting, and really made some connections and took a circuitous route to getting into a newsroom, but finally got there. But every market I went into, Jody, I was the first woman in the market. I was the only woman in the market. I was the only woman in a locker room for the majority of my career. And as I've gone on, I've been sort of the only woman in a boardroom or in a meeting room as well. But I mean, all of that experience in the early days being a minority very much in the professional sense has really helped me throughout the entire course of my career. But talking is all I ever wanted to do for a living, if we're going to be real candid here.
Besides the obvious, the sports journalism degrees and the radio and television communications courses and things like that, what do you feel like helped you the most to achieve your goals?
I have to be real candid. And in terms of the early career development, it was really about the internship experience, because I feel so much that sports broadcasting is very much a trade to some extent. And there's only so much you can learn in a classroom setting where the deadlines are not real. That internship really does prepare young professionals who are interested in going into a broadcasting space. It really does prepare them for that real world experience. Now, as I've gotten older and, you know, my career narrative has transitioned to include a number of other things besides solely sports broadcasting, I think management, leadership development, even plain organizational tactics and strategies, those are incredibly helpful as we're just overburdened with data and information and 700 emails a day. Just some practical utilitarian types of classes to help you manage that deluge of communication you get every day. I think that is so incredibly valuable. Everyone has a different hack, but I think real organization would kind of help with that.
Not to mention the core courses like English and writing and things like that hone your skills in communication.
And let's be real clear there. Absolutely. It is all about English and writing and speaking, because so much of what we do is both verbal and oral at this point. And it's interesting because I see a lot of professionals, they struggle with basic grammar fundamentals. And I'm talking high-level professionals. We're talking subject-verb agreement, ending sentences with prepositions, things that Mrs. Rovner in second grade taught us to never do. And those translate not just to broadcasting, quite frankly. I mean, it's to everyday life, in my opinion, no matter what your area of business is.
There's so many different ways that a communicator can work in the sports field these days, whether it's in media and marketing, social media, videography. I mean, professional teams, college teams, teams, even some high school teams, have entire departments that do nothing but film or tape practice. It's grown enormously since I was in college playing football. It's grown enormously since you were in high school playing basketball. And really, the only limit is your imagination and the work you're willing to put in.
It is. And I think that's where the opportunity lies. To be real serious here, you know, I am a lifelong newsroom person. I love being in a newsroom and the tension and the urgency and the timeliness that comes with working in a newsroom. But from a sports perspective, local news is contracting. And I didn't ever get to the network level, nor did I necessarily aspire to it because I'm such a passionate local news fan. But in terms of the local news opportunity for somebody who wants to work in sports, there are not a lot of them out there. There are fewer and fewer of those opportunities out there from a sports broadcasting perspective. The opportunity on the team side is massive because here at FC Dallas, we're looking for people to tell our stories and drive relevance for us on multiple platforms, on broadcast, digital, social, podcasts, written word. And it's not just for our particular primary property, FC Dallas. It's for our youth program. It's for our academy system. It's for our USL League One team, who is sort of our minor league affiliate, if you will. It's for Toyota Stadium, the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And as you look at more brands and businesses in the sports space looking to tell their own stories, those opportunities for these multimedia journalists to grow over the course of their career and expand their skill set out of solely broadcasting is massive. I mean, we're hiring for a position right now on my team for a digital and social media manager. This is an opportunity with some lifespan to it. Whereas in a newsroom, those opportunities are not as prolific as they once were when you and I were really sort of making hay in that industry.
Would people be surprised at the amount of homework that goes into doing what you do?
Jody, do you know when I talk to kids, whether they are high school, college age, or young professionals, I tell them they will do more homework once they are out of school if they are interested in talking sports for a living than they ever did in school. Because you have to be prepared, whether it's the data and the stats about a player or a particular relevant storyline about a player, a coach, a team going into a match or a game. There's so much information that you need to know and have at the ready. And the thing is, the homework you do and the information you learn about a team, player, coach, you're probably not even going to use it. You know, half the research and homework we do doesn't even get used in a broadcast capacity. You just need to have it in your repertoire to have at the ready should there be an opportunity over the course of a game come up that you can use that particular piece of information. It's so funny. I talk to these kids. They say, we can't wait to get on TV and stop doing homework. The homework just begins when you graduate, because you don't just show up and talk. You have to research, study, write, know everything about a particular matchup or story or professional athlete or college athlete before you even get on the air. You have to have that in your background and in your knowledge base before you can talk articulately about this particular story. So it's so funny. I think the homework is done when when they graduate.
So where do you keep your NBA championship ring?
It's in my jewelry box, Jody. It's in my jewelry box. I break it out once or twice a year. I wear it on speaking engagements so I can pass it around the room, because I'd rather see them looking at my ring than texting on a phone, you know, or tweeting on a phone. So I give them my ring to look at, my Rockets ring, and hopefully we'll get an FC Dallas championship ring soon that I can wear to speaking engagements and other things as well.
How happy is the Hunt family right now after the Super Bowl?
Let me tell you, you know, they're just so wonderful and generous and gracious and magnanimous to work for every day. But, you know, after you win a Super Bowl and win a Lombardi trophy, there's just another air in the room when you walk through the offices. You know, they knew they had a good team and a great quarterback in Pat Mahomes, but you know, what they're building there and the youth of this quarterback who just really is transcendent, they're very optimistic about the future. And they're taking it in. There's been a lot of nice well wishes coming in to Clark and Dan also.
I cannot thank you enough for doing this. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you, Jody. It's good to catch up with you.
It's all about what you do before you get to the job that makes you successful in the job.
Exactly.
I know you've run into this too, and I did for a long time in coaching youth sports. People who would bring their kids to the field, say on Saturday morning, and that 8:30 start you can't avoid. And they wouldn't stop to get the kid a proper breakfast or wouldn't wake them up early enough. They would just go through the drive-through and think, okay, I've got them fed full of pancakes. And you get to the ball field and they don't wake up until the fifth or sixth inning.
Oh, it all starts the day before, really, you know, and the weeks before preparing for the event. But, you know, getting enough rest, number one, going to bed early. Hey, we got a game early, guys. I know you like to stay up. Do it tomorrow night. You know, try to emphasize you're dealing with young people. You only advise. You hope they take the advice. But then as parents, we've got to follow through with making sure they're in bed. Then get the young man or young woman up before 2 hours before their event.
I think that's about right. At least 2 hours.
Yeah,
I'd
and
say.
They need to eat no more than an hour and a half, hour and 15 before the event. So have something. And they can't go in there without any nutrition or hydration.
And proper nutrition, too, because a stack full of pancakes and syrup is just going to slow you down.
No, you want to get good protein, some complex carbs.
Do you remember our pregame ritual when we would drive to Longview to get our heads handed to us every year? It was fruit cup. You had to eat your fruit cup. Well, everybody got a fruit cup.
I figured we probably had a chicken fried steak and french fries.
Well, that was at Haystack. Yeah, we did that before we left town. And then by the time we got to Longview for the game, the mandatory fruit cup.
Oh, gosh.
But I've also seen parents handing their kids energy drinks, Monsters, and things like that. And I just can't imagine anything worse nutritionally. But you'd see kids that were just bouncing off the dugout walls.
Yeah, I can't think an energy drink would be real good for a young man. I try to avoid them myself. But no, I don't think that's the way to go with our young people, to pump them full of sugar or caffeine to try to get their energy rolling.
We came from the days of taking salt tablets to prevent cramps and
that's
things
right.
like that. But what would you recommend? Is there anything specific?
Well, lean proteins.
Yeah.
You know, 6 to 8 ounces max of a piece of chicken, a piece of fish, or a piece of beef, broccoli, and maybe, you know, a plain potato.
Give themselves time to
digest it, yes.
Because we don't want to see that again.
No, we don't. But we've got to have nutrition in our athletes before we perform, and certainly at a younger age, it's tougher to do that, but we've got to certainly be aware of the importance of that.
We were talking last time about coming to the ball field or the practice facility like you mean to do business. And part of the business at 8, 9, 10, 13 years of age is in the classroom. And it's really hard to get this done, but I always thought one of the most important things you could do is make sure your kids do their homework before they come to practice, before they come to the game. A, that should be the priority anyway.
Sure.
And B, they're going to be shagged out by the time the game's over. They're not going to want to do it when they get home.
One of the first things I tell my players when they show up is, you are not a normal student anymore. You've made this commitment to be an athlete and be involved in an extracurricular activity. Wouldn't be any different if you were in band or in cheerleading or in drama or anything that took hours extra on top of your homework and your normal school day. So getting home and getting on the internet or playing video games or watching TV, that's all gone. The first thing you do is get on that homework and get all, if you can, finish and get something to eat and then get ready to go to practice, because the last thing you want to do after a 2-hour practice is come home and do 2 hours of homework.
Algebra doesn't sound very exciting after you've been on
the
baseball.
No, and you're not going to have the mental energy to do it. But you have to make those sacrifices.
Yeah.
But it is worth making it.
Yeah.
In order to be involved with the sport or the activity.
One of the things Gina was talking about were the mentors, the internships that she had along the
sure.
way, that she actually got someplace where she could see how other people did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a kid that one of my heroes, I was never much of a basketball player, but I loved John Havlicek. He was a guy that I really wanted to imitate, whose game I admired, whose style I admired.
That is important. We probably got into a sport influenced by an athlete in that sport if our parents weren't our main influence in getting into sports. So it is good to emulate those that are doing all the things that you see as a benefit to your game. But the true mentorship is going to be closer to home. It's going to be somebody that can have an impact on you. A teacher or a coach or a parent or a friend even, that you can emulate locally and do that. But yeah, don't follow in the same footsteps. Just study the path people have taken.
Study what they do, see what's successful.
Yeah, and see what works for you.
Yeah, and see what works for you.
Absolutely.
I wanted to make sure that we spent some time on preparation in terms of drills and that sort of thing.
Sure.
Back in school, I was as slow as Christmas.
Your 40 wasn't your
wasn't
biggest
asset.
No.
What can a parent do? Because to me, speed and balance are the most important thing regardless of what sport you're looking at. If you have speed, greasy lightning speed, and you have balance and the ability to move from the center, get your feet under you, always have a good center of gravity, those are the two things that can contribute to success no matter what the sport or activity.
Well, top end speed, sprinter speed, that's a rare thing in a lot of kids to be able to run track and have that top end sprinter speed. But if speed was the only criteria, then every track athlete would also be playing football and other sports. It's just a facet, just another tool in your chest. You want to be explosive and have acceleration and be able to have quick bursts of speed. Most games are played in a tight window with angles to run. You're not really covering more than about 10 yards of space. If you're a lineman, you're just working in a small window. If you're a tackle, how quick can I get off the ball and get my hands on him and move my feet? That's quickness and speed and agility and balance. You don't have to run a 4.3 40 to be able to get quicker to do those things. But there's form involved in everything running and improving your speed.
Speed within the game.
Right.
But most of us don't have that kind of teaching or instruction, certainly from rec league coaches and that sort of thing.
Well, only track coaches give you the fundamentals of running. So when you're doing high knees in a football drill, the coach isn't talking about body tilt, arm speed, knee lift, pull with your toes, breathe in through your nose and out through your lips. You probably never heard that. But that's how you run, and that's how you take in air and release air. And your body angle tilt, your knee lift, your legs extend, your toes pull off the ground, and your arms swing like two pendulums. If you're not in track practice, those fundamentals of running are not ingrained each time you do a drill. But with my track background, we always work on speed and agility in the beginning of practice because everybody wants to get quicker and faster.
District championship track background.
Long jump and relays.
Long jump and relays and things like that. You know, that burst of energy. There's a young kid who lives across the street who's just started playing indoor soccer, and we have so much fun. This sounds so silly, but it's that twitch muscle speed. Where the old thing where you'd put your hands on top of his hands and then he has to slap the top of your hand before you can pull it away. And it's just so basic, and yet it teaches that kind of quickness you have to have in order to make a play on a soccer field, make a play on a ground ball hit up the middle, make a play on a running back coming around the end.
Sure.
And use that burst.
Well, it's fast twitch muscle fiber. And fast twitch muscle is developed through resistance training. And that's where we have Vertimax. Some of the more advanced training facilities have that equipment where you can get an athlete hooked up with bands and do running drills and jumping drills and backpedal drills and then repeat the drills without the band and develop more fast twitch fiber. You know, we can get kids to increase vertical through Vertimax training, which is fast twitch muscle resistance. So we've gone so far in training now. These things didn't exist. These terms didn't exist. This kind of training didn't exist when you and I grew up and came through.
Well, certainly not the thought. I mean, at the higher professional levels, there were coaches who understood it. And, you know, things that were designed to strengthen. I've always, you know, in baseball, I always taught my kids that all your power comes from your legs. Everything, whether swinging a baseball bat or anything else, it all comes from your bigger muscles, which are in your legs, in your abdomen, your core. And if you can transfer that energy from the bottom to the top through the hands out the bat, then you're a hitter. And, you know, even the weighted bat, it's very 19th century, but it works.
Yes.
Those kind of tricks, those little tips.
Ankle weights, anything that resists your body movement through a set of drills and then repeating those drills without, the body thinks it has that resistance upon it and starts exhibiting that same power as muscle memory and building that fast twitch.
I remember seeing you jump rope with ankle weights.
Well, yeah, that's all we could do. That's pretty rudimentary back then, but we did what we could.
We did what we could, and it worked for you.
Yeah, and it did. And it helped a little bit.
I've always thought jumping rope is one of the greatest exercises. It builds endurance.
It might be the single best thing to do if you could only pick one thing to do.
Do you think so?
Well, you've got to get every muscle firing. You're firing off your toes, your arms are swinging, keeping your core tight and engaged. Your endurance, how long you can go, your speed, how fast. So there's a lot to be said for push-ups, pull-ups, and jumping rope. Yeah, well, that's why we have weight training.
When you see a kid who's got that kind of movement, that kind of gift, it's not something that you're necessarily born with, but you can acquire it if you're willing to work to get it. That's the thing I love about athletics. the kid who isn't necessarily born with all of that. It's the person who works for it and achieves it. And, you and I have both known guys like that over the years who weren't necessarily the best athlete, but certainly had the best dedication and the most effort.
Even those born with it, to reach the elite levels, and those that you see that are the elite level of pro sport, they were born with some talent. And they've taken it and developed it to an unworldly phase, and hard work, no matter what, is going to be the key to you getting where you need to be. You got to put in the time.
What's your favorite hack?
Ooh, I always finish with some yoga balancing poses, that not every trainer I see has people get into the tree and do the leg crossover squat and the extension and the kickback. Yeah, all of this makes us a better athlete if we have total control of our body movements.
Remember 30 years ago?
I always emphasize that.
When 30 years ago, the Cowboys brought in martial arts experts to teach Randy White
combatives
how to fight with their hands.
Sure.
And everybody went, what? Take your kids with you to yoga, for crying out loud.
I'm a big believer in yoga and stretching. And really emphasize stretching every night.
I've heard a lot as a coach over the years that 8, 9, 10-year-olds don't need to stretch.
The old way of warming up is the cool-down stretch, sitting on the ground, reaching for your toes. That's at the end. You've got to get the muscles and joints warmed, loosened up, and your heart rate up. So it's high knee drills, karaoke, backpedal and turn. Those are warm-up drills to get you ready for athletic competition. This bend over touching your toes or at the end of competition to lengthen your muscles back out.
That's a great launching point for next time. We'll
Thank
talk
you.
About all of that sort of thing, plus injury prevention next time on The Two Jodies.